Hi, I'm Una Chaplin, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Hollywood Exiles. It tells the story of how my grandfather, Charlie Chaplin, and many others were caught up in a campaign to root out communism in Hollywood. It's a story of glamour and scandal and political intrigue and a battle for the soul of a nation. Hollywood Exiles from CBC Podcasts and the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
You know, a lot of artists on this show, the last thing they want to do is talk to me about like what genre they are. But Zune or Daniel Monkman, they don't mind at all because they play a genre they helped create. It's called moccasin gaze. It's a combination of shoegaze and dream pop and indigenous music. And they'll be here to tell you about their new song and the time their uncle looked at them when they heard it and said, "Keep it. That's a hit." Zune coming up. I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. So let me tell you a story about the artist you're listening to right now. The song is called Vibrant Colors. It's by the artist Zune. Their real name is Daniel Monkman. A few years back, something pretty extraordinary happened. Daniel's debut record, Bleached Waves, was shortlisted for the Polaris Music Prize, which, if you don't know, it is like the award given out to the best album in Canada. And check this out. The album they made with their band, Ombagaze, was also shortlisted for the Polaris Music Prize. So two debut records, two considerations to be the best album in Canada. But that kind of makes sense. I'll tell you this. Every time I have taken someone to see Daniel Monkman or Zune, I've watched their jaws just drop and their eyes light up at Daniel's music. Daniel sort of created their own genre. It's called moccasin gaze. It's this combination of shoegaze and dream pop and indigenous music, like in particular indigenous drumming. And Daniel has a new record. It's called Beka Moingan. If you're looking for a new favorite artist, I think I got you covered right here. Here's my conversation with Daniel Monkman, aka Zune. How are you?
Hi, Tom. I'm great. Thank you for asking.
It's been quite a couple of years. I mean, when did you and I first talk? Maybe two, three years ago?
Yeah, 2020, or maybe just before the actual record came out.
It was right before Bleached Waves came out. You were talking to me. You had done some music, but you were still sort of brand new. And look what's happened in the past little while. You have all these records. You have the nominations that I mentioned. I mean, you've opened up for Broken Social Scene for tons. You played Massey Hall. Give me like a pinch me moment from the past 2 years. A moment where you went like, I can't really believe I'm here.
Okay, because I've actually thought about this just on my own time, but. I was recording at a Hotel Tatango in Montreal, Quebec, and the recording session was with the Medicine Singers, Yonatan Gat and Lee Ronaldo. And the pinch me moment, I think, for me was right at the end of the session when we were just Yonatan Gat's like, okay, everyone's going to have a moment to write a song in on the spot, and we're all going to back you and record it and see what we get. And so everyone was going through their song, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I was so overwhelmed, but at the same time, there was so much love from everyone that when it came to me, I just remember Lee Ronaldo like handing me a guitar and being like, "Hey, Daniel, this is in a weird tuning. I hope that it's okay for you." And I was just like, I'm sure it's going to be fine, Lee. And I remember holding the guitar, looking at everyone in the room, and everybody is anticipating me to hit the first note to know what they're going to do. And I just remember seeing Lee holding this weird antenna thing and Yonatan Gat on guitar, and some Godspeed people were there like on drums and violin, and everyone was kind of waiting for me to hit that first note, and I just went into it. And I just remember looking over at Lee, and he had moved from this antenna to the organ and making beautiful noise. And in that moment, I was like, wow, I don't know how I got to this place, but I'm here now, and I'm everything that I've learned, it was leading me up to this, being able to write a song on the spot.
Oh my God. Were you a big Sonic Youth fan growing up?
Oh my, that's how I got into alternate tunings, because I remember hearing an interview with Thurston Moore and Lee Ronaldo talking about how they got into open tunings.
Did you keep it cool? Were you able to keep it cool?
Oh my, the whole time I was like, Daniel, just treat Lee like a studio musician where we're just going into write, record, and that's it.
You started bossing him around a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, what an amazing, and when you say, how did you end up here? I mean, it makes perfect sense to us here, because we've been fans of yours since the very beginning, and you make such great music. And in fact, if you want to hear more of Daniel's story and sort of like how Daniel found themselves making music and the story behind Bleach Waves, I want to let you know you can listen to it on our website or cbc.ca/Q. But let's talk about album two. And I'm a big fan of the expression that you have your whole life to make your debut record, but you got like a couple of months to make your follow-up record. What was the direction you wanted to take for the new record?
Well, I finished Bleached Waves in like 2018, and then there was all this time of waiting. And in that time, I was really, had just lost my dad, and work was like really taking up all my time, because I hadn't pushed through that threshold as a new artist to like keep going. And so in 2020, when the world kind of locked down, I invested in some equipment and started writing my, I guess we would call now, a pandemic record. So I made it during the lockdown and finished it in the lockdown. And then the last part, why it took so long, is just waiting for the orchestra to work out all their parts, because with other countries, how they dealt with it, it just caused some roadblocks. But I wanted to create an album that was my dream album. And my first record, I wanted to make an orchestral album, almost like Nick Drake meets Willie Dunn and something like that. And creating this, I had a lot of time to really focus on making that and keeping that vision.
What did you find yourself writing about?
With lockdown, it finally gave me a time to grieve, really, about a lot of things that had happened in my life. And Bleached Waves was a testament of my recovery. And then the tail end of it was about my relationship with my dad. And then my dad passed away. And I didn't really get to write all the songs that I wanted to. And then during the pandemic, I lost, just like everyone else, we lost loved ones and friends. And so these songs are a collection of memories from people that I have lost, and in order for me to maybe remember them in that way.
Well, in that context, then, tell me a little bit about the song we're about to hear. Before we get you to introduce it, tell me a little bit about where it came from.
Dotem was a song that I wrote on the reservation when my dad was still alive. And my uncle Matt was there, and he heard me finish writing it. And he was like, Daniel, you got to keep this song. You can't give it away to any person. You can't sell it to anyone. Like, just keep it for yourself and honor it. And I didn't know what I could do with it. And at that time, like 7 years ago, I didn't see the potential, but I kept it through all these years, and being able to write it and record it in this way, because there was many other versions, but this was the one that just clicked, and it was undeniable.
Well, let's introduce it. Let's introduce the song. If you could do your best Casey Kasem here and tell us who you are and introduce the song so people can hear it.
Hi, this is Daniel, also known as Zune, and this is my song, Dotem.
Thank you.
from their brand new album, Beka Moingen, that was Zune with Dotem on key.
One of the best shows of the year, according to Apple, Amazon, and Time, is back for another round. This season, we're diving deep into some of McCartney's most beloved songs. Yesterday, Band on the Run, Hey Jude. And McCartney's favourite song in his entire catalogue, Here, There, and Everywhere. Listen to Season 2 of McCartney, A Life in Lyrics, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Some sad news now. Daniel Brooks, the renowned Canadian theater director, has died at 64, 5 years after being diagnosed with lung cancer. If you're not familiar with Daniel, it's hard to put into words the impact he's had on Canadian theater. He's been a writer, director, actor, and mentor to so many. He's staged classics like A Doll's House, Waiting for Godot, and Oedipus Rex. His play, The Noam Chomsky Lectures, which he co-wrote with Guillermo Verdeckia, was nominated for the Governor General's Literary Award. He also won the first Simonovitch Prize, awarded to artists who have made significant contributions to Canadian theater. Even after Daniel's lung cancer diagnosis in 2018, he kept working. And last month, he was finally able to stage The Seagull by Anton Chekhov, a play he had been trying to get on the stage since 2020, but was delayed because of the pandemic. I remember around that time, around 2020, around the time of those early days of the pandemic, I got to talk to Daniel on this show. And I remember talking about the production, but we also talked about how his perspective on life, and in particular on time, had changed since being diagnosed with cancer. Take a listen. It reminds me of something you wrote in your notes about working on The Seagull. You said, I love Chekhov because these plays he invented are symphonies, working in dimensions of time and space and in body and in language. And in these notes, you write, time is a tyrannical pressure, a shimmering mirage, a dream. Tell me more about that. What is it that intrigues you about time being a tyrannical pressure?
Well, night is falling and it's a tyrannical pressure as we try to achieve what we set out to achieve in a particular day. But also, I think, in terms of what we imagine we might achieve with our lives, what we imagine we are. So there's the tyrannical pressure of time, which works on our bodies and makes us sick and eventually kills us. And of course, for me, time is an extraordinarily poignant and interesting reality, given that I don't know how much time I have left. I have stage 4 lung cancer. And to even question what it means to ask the question, how much time do I have left? Like what? So I get another 3 months. So I get another 3 years. One is longer, but at the end of the 3 months, it'll be over. At the end of the 3 years, it'll be over. Eventually, I will be meeting my maker, as they say. And it's almost irrelevant how long I have, because it's impossible subjectively to measure that time. And I think Chekhov captures the experience of time, the subjectivity of time, in a beautiful way. And I think in creating a Chekhov performance, that's part of the exciting work that a director and a design team have.
If you don't mind me saying so, I don't think it's a guarantee that you have the kind of perspective that you do right now. You seem to have gotten somewhere with it.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can't compare myself to anybody else. I've had a life working with great literature and great theater and great ideas that I hope have taught me something. But also, I had one moment that really helped me right off the bat. Mm. I camp with a couple of families every year, and I went up for one day to this lake we camp at, and after a beautiful, sunny, northern Canadian Shield summer day, I was standing on the rocks looking at the water, and I was looking at a rock over to my left where I had memories of my youngest daughter scampering on that rock. And then I looked at the water shimmering in the light, and I thought, this may be the last time I look at this. And I realized I couldn't do anything with that. So what if it was the last time? What? How does that help me? What am I going to, how am I going to, I can't lock it away. I can't own it. I can't do anything with this moment other than be in it. And that revelation at that time has been an enormous aid to me in the ensuing almost 2 years now since I've been diagnosed.
What I love about what you said when I asked you, you know, not everyone gets to have the kind of perspective that you have. You said, you know, I've had a life of literature and I've had a life of art that has sort of helped me here. You know, and I think on this show, I'm always searching for kind of concrete mm-hmm. examples of art mattering, because I know it does. You know, I know deep down in my life that it does, but I'm always searching for those concrete examples. Just to hear you say that is very meaningful to me, because I feel like I found one. What can you say before we go? What can you say about what art can give to us and what it's given to you in a greater way?
I think that one of the things that making art has taught me that human beings are interdependent, whether they like it or not. For the better or for the worse, it doesn't matter. It's just an existential fact of life. And how we contend with that interdependence constitutes a great part of what our lives are. And I think that is something I've learned through both consuming and creating art.
It's meaningful to me then that, you know, as you face cancer and as you face this play that had to be stopped for a little while, we hope that you're giving those minutes you have to teaching others in, you know, an online masterclass. What do you hope to give them?
To help ease the fear that we all have of such things. You know, everybody is either going to get this disease or they're going to have a loved one who gets it. It's just close to us all. And fear can be a terrible obstacle to experiencing it. One of the things I hope to help people with is overcoming that fear so that they can be in the experience of, you know, not many people get to spend 2 years with stage four lung cancer. It's a very particular experience. And if you take the fear away, there's something quite extraordinary about it, quite beautiful about it. So I guess that's one thing that I hope to do.
That was a bit of my conversation with the legendary Canadian theater director, Daniel Brooks. Daniel died earlier this week from lung cancer. He was just 64. A celebration of Daniel's life will be held later this summer. And that is it for the show this week. Our show was produced by Ben Edwards, Vanessa Greco, Vanessa Nigro, Mitch Pollack, Jennifer Warren. Trish Leparek is our intern. Our digital team is Amelia Ekbal, Shuli Grossman-Gray, and Vivian Brichot. Our podcast producer is Caitlin Swan. The directors this week are Matthew Murphy, and it says here, Matt Murphy. Our engineers this week were Sam Hashemi and Austin Pomeroy. Our senior producers this week were Liz Hossein and Beza Seifa. Anne McKeegan is the executive producer of Q. Our other episode that's out today is a conversation with one of the finest Canadian musicians of all time, who this weekend will be receiving one of the most prestigious awards a Canadian artist can receive, the Governor General's Award for Performing Arts, Katie Lang. And because it's not about a specific tour or a specific album, Katie and I talk about her entire groundbreaking career. I hope you can check that conversation out wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Tom Power. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.